Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, March 28th, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Today I have the distinct pleasure of introducing you to one of the most charming and delightful people I've had the pleasure of interviewing. He is the fantastic artist, Jezza Smiles. I know you will love getting to know him and his artwork as much as I have. Jezza is here as part of the Erotic Mind podcast series, don't you know? I've been presenting these conversations with noted erotic artists, both visual and literary, from all over the freaking world for over 3 years now. They are presented as a means of uncovering something of the creative process involved in this specialized art form, and Jezza does not disappoint. He is very insightful and oh so forthcoming. It's truly a joy to be in his company. And to add some spice to an already delectable conversation, Jezza has put together a tantalizing slideshow of his work. Don't miss it. It accompanies today's podcast posting on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Be sure to check out Jezza and his delicious artwork on his site, jezzasmiles.blogspot.com. And look for him on Facebook, too. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab. The How-To Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? Okay. Without further ado, let's get on with the show. Holy cow, Jezza Smiles, welcome and thank you for joining us. I'm thrilled that we have this time to chat. I love your brilliant artwork, and I am so happy that you're here to open and share your erotic mind with us. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello, nice people.
And for the most part, they are nice people. There are, of course, perverts out there.
They're very nice for listening.
Yes. And there are some perverts out there, too, but, you know, they're the nicest of the nice, if you ask me. Because I consider myself a big, fat pervert, don't you know?
Dr. Dick.
So, listen, I confess that I've been spending way too much time on your site, jezzasmiles.blogspot.com. I believe that I am single-handedly burning up all of your bandwidth. Besides all the beautiful illustrations of your own work, which are like so much eye candy, you also feature very insightful interviews with other artists and writers, and I love that.
Oh, good. Oh, I do too.
Oh, good, good, good. So you are actually creating this amazing archive of erotic artistry. Was that your intention when you started?
No, not at all. I don't know what I intended when I started. Like for the interviews, I knew I just, I don't have a very big artistic social circle here, and you know, every time I talk to an artist, I get inspired, I get motivated, and I just kind of feed off of their creative energy to keep me going.
Right.
And there's been so many periods throughout my life that, you know, because it's just me and I don't have that artistic energy, I just kind of burn myself out or just
die
and stop drawing or stop. Well, yeah, stop drawing for a while, and I don't want to be in that. I'm really kind of loving my creative space, and so in order to keep that going, I needed a artistic circle to feed off of, but I don't really have one. So doing the interviews kind of gives me that, because I definitely feed off of it, especially getting to interview people that I'm a big fan of, people that inspire me and that motivate me. Like, when they agree to do the interview, I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God. but, yeah, it's pretty fun.
Great. I'll bet your fellow artists are grateful for the exposure. I mean, it's one thing to have one's art recognized by the public. It's a totally other thing to be recognized as the artist and lauded for his or her talent. Don't you agree?
I agree completely. I think as artists, people learn about us or they just kind of, they know our work and they know
right.
our name, but they don't know anything about us.
Right.
And I've seen a couple of interviews on other blogs or here and there, and you still, like after you've read it, it's like, wait a minute, they're an erotic artist. They draw porn, and I don't know anything about them. You know, they did an interview, but it was all the same questions that you ask every artist. And
right.
so that's one of the things that I like about my interviews is I really like that most 9 out of 10 people will be more than comfortable to tell me all of the juicy goods that I ask them. Usually, you know, like, you know.
Well, you know, that's really the amazing thing, because in many ways, you and I are doing a lot of the same thing. This Erotic Mind podcast series grew out of my desire to better understand the creative process of artists like you, you know, to get inside their skin, so to speak, and not just talk about their work, but, you know, how they came to be and who are they and why do they do what they do. And that's what I found so refreshing about your interviews, because they're brilliant that way. I mean, I get a real insight into the human behind the art.
Ah, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Coming from you, who's been doing this for a while, that took a lot. I appreciate it.
And besides, you know, I'm going to hit up a lot of those artists for this series, too, by the way.
Ooh.
I'm going to tell them you sent me. There.
I'll do that.
So, do you find that there's a good deal of common ground with the people that you interview?
You know what? When it comes to art, or I guess us as erotic art, but even non-erotic artists,
right.
and like I'm asking them questions about art or like their workflows or stuff like how did they get over blocks in creativity and stuff like that, 9 times out of 10, you'll get the same or a very similar answer from most artists. So I find a lot of us have very similar work processes, I guess, when it comes to our creativity. That I find very... common ground. And I don't think that that's a bad thing, that we all have very similar things.
Yeah,
I actually find that very validating, that
yes.
okay, the big guns are doing that, so nobody can.
Well, I hope you're counting yourself among the big guns, because I certainly do.
Oh, wow.
So are you discovering any surprises? Like discovering that an artist or a writer is nothing like the art he or she produces?
You know what? I'm surprised a lot of times that a good half of the time, you know, it being porn or erotic art or, you know, full-on nudity or sex, yeah, something like that, when the actual artist is very conservative or very shy, and it's like, how can you be shy? You draw porn. You know, I'm constantly surprised by stuff like that, or when it's only happened a few times. Most of the time, they're a little bit like the work that they reflect, but other times, like when their work is just so crazy and far out there, and they're very serious when you talk to them.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, that sort of stuff surprises me. But I've always been surprised in a good way, so it's been very good.
I find the same thing in these interviews too. I mean, there's people out there who are, you know, just such vibrant, you know, alive, their art is so vibrant and alive, and when you talk to them, they're very, you know, almost self-conscious, and, you know, very self-deprecating, and they feel, you know, like, I can't understand why anybody is interested in me at all. And I just thought, how fascinating, how absolutely fascinating that is.
Yeah, I think it's easy as an artist to feel that way because it's not like you're a model or an actor that, you know, your face is always out there. It's
right.
Out there, and it's nice to kind of be able to hide behind your art that, okay, look at my art, but never mind me.
Yeah, the little like, man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I love it. I think that's so insightful. And that's one of the main reasons that I was so stoked to have you on this show. I mean, besides your own beautifully smutty work, you have this added insight into the minds of other people, other artists, and I think that's completely amazing. And I want to plumb the depths with you, if you don't mind.
Right, let's go deep.
So before we get to discussing erotic art in general and your work in particular, let's talk about something really interesting. Let's talk about you.
Okay.
Can you give us a little bio? Tell us something interesting about yourself, like where were you born and raised and schooled, and do you like muscle magazines and gladiator movies, and do you have a husband, a partner, a pet? All kinds of stuff like that.
Okay. I was actually born in Germany, in Wiesbaden, Germany. And then I came to the United States when I was 6.
A military grad?
For the most part, for the most part.
Okay.
And then we moved around a little bit, and then I did most of my growing up and schooling here in New Mexico.
That's where you are now, yes.
Yeah, and then as soon as I could get away, I left. But it's called the Land of Enchantment, but many locals call it the Land of Entrapment because every time you try and leave, it either keeps you here or you pull back. It's like the island in Lost.
Oh,
please, you have to go back. So I'm probably dead right now.
Well, you're the most animated dead person I know.
It's the bones. I like to rattle the bones. But so born in Germany, grew up in New Mexico. No, I'm single, and no pets.
Single?
My pets.
Well, we'll have to see to that. I'm going to start a matchmaking service, that's for sure.
Oh, please do.
So, you alluded to the fact that you left New Mexico for a while. What was that about? Where did you go, and for what?
Okay, well, while in high school, I enrolled in this program with the military to enlist in the military, and then, after graduation, I went into military and traveled with them a little bit. I thought I would see the world with the military, but all I saw was the south of the U.S. Or at least with the Army. And then, but I learned how to jump out of planes and do all kinds of Rambo stuff. And so that was fun and cool. And, you know, I learned a lot more about U.S. history and developed a little more patriotism and stuff like that. So it was definitely good. And when I got out, I didn't really know what I was going to do when I got out, so I came back home, and I've got, you know, my sister had 3 nephews that my nephews and niece and stuff are very much like my kids. I just love having little kid energy around me, and so at that time, that was definitely a motivation to stay here, and so, but I still didn't know what I wanted to do, so I became a cop, and that was a lot of fun, and then 9/11 happened, and so was reactivated in the military, and then went off to war and stuff and blah blah blah. But when I came back, or like when you come back from the military, when you're kind of activated like that, and before you go back to your normal job, you have about a 90-day window that legally you don't have to go back to work. And so with those 90 days, I went to Australia. And just fell in love with it, and then came back, and then went back again, and I think it was on the second trip that I just made up my mind that this is home, I want to live here, and so I came back and settled everything and moved down to Australia, so,
wow.
And then that was, I stayed there for a little over 3 years, almost 4 actually.
Did you study there too?
Yeah, I studied animation at one of the universities that I don't want to give any publicity to. Because I'm not very happy with that.
I love it. That was very diplomatic. Good for you.
But, yeah, and so it was very, very hard to leave Australia, but it really did pay off. There's just, when you're a nobody artist or an independent freelance artist, there's just so many more opportunities in the U.S. than there are in Australia, because Australia is so more isolated from the rest of the world, so things tend to go a little slower. And for the most part, that sort of isolation and the pace is what I kind of loved about it. But, you know, when you're trying to make a name for yourself and kind of dive into all of that, it was smarter to be here. And then my brother had a niece and now a nephew that he named after me and all this stuff. And so very much a reason to be here. So Australia feels very much like home, but right now it's better for me to be here.
Got it. So you said something on your site that was fascinating. You said you've been drawing since the womb. My mother's uterus is covered in my earliest works. So did your folks and other people around you when you were a kid recognize your gift and nurture it?
You know what? My mom definitely recognized it. My mom is a very busy woman because for most, or when we came to the U.S., she was raising us as a single mom, and so she was very busy. But while we were in Germany, you know, and my dad was around and everything, I had a little preschool teacher pull my mom aside and try and recommend this art school that starts. You know, you gotta love the Europeans. They definitely try and nurture their artists from a very young age, and that was really cool. But my mom definitely couldn't afford this school and all that stuff. But it was nice that this teacher just kind of recognized it. And so when we came to the States, my mom tried to be, I think she attempted to be supportive. She just didn't know how. She's not an artist, and so she just didn't know how. But like, if I drew something, oh, that's very nice, oh, that's very pretty, or, you know, she definitely hung all my artwork and stuff. But other than that, I didn't get any kind of, you know, like I was mentioning earlier, you just kind of feed off of other creative people and stuff, and so it really was kind of tapping nothing there. But as I got older, like in middle school, a couple of teachers definitely recognized my art. One of my teachers, it was funny because I was taking some art classes, and it was my science teacher that took a big interest in me, and she actually organized this day where I basically didn't have to go to class, and she had gotten a substitute for her classes because she took me to this big interview with the local paper, the Albuquerque Journal, and wanted to set up a job and all that stuff. And she didn't even stop there. On top of that, she hooked me up with this job mentor program with this artist who at the time was an artist for Playboy, but he actually, like, our time together was very cut short because he was moving to New York because he got a job with the New Yorker. So I was like, oh, really, really cool. But, you know, she just, my science teacher didn't stop at all. Her name was Miss Needham. And she introduced me to this other organization called SWAC, Southwest Association of Cartoonists. And that right there was the first major exposure that I had as far as like being part of any kind of artistic community, because they were, you know, all of them were much more adults, but they had so much experience and offered so many tips. It was like kind of like I felt like a little vampire that just found a
book. How old were you at the time?
I think I was about 12.
Interesting.
It was like the 6th or 7th grade.
You know, one of the curious things is that several people in this series have said that their parents and other people around them were actually hostile to the idea of them becoming an artist or a writer
as
a career. And, you know, they had to battle against, you know, a lot of resistance from the people around them. You know, go to law school, become a doctor, do this, married, have kids, and, you know, this writing, this art, this, you know, this is for children and for play and not for real life. And, you know, so overcoming those obstacles is an amazing thing, a great testament to, you know, the will that people must have in order to succeed, it seems to me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, because, you know, I never really considered that. You know, I always, you know, sometimes I find myself like, like when I meet other people who are, like, one of the Boys Meets Heroes artists, Shane Avery, both of his parents are artists, and Shane is an amazing artist. I mean, if you've seen his sketches or anything, they're all so clean and meticulous. It's kind of like that Mozart movie
where I feel
like the guy kind of jealous of him because he just writes and composes from scratch,
right.
And that's how I feel about Shane Avery. Well, I'm not jealous, but I am definitely, I definitely admire that. And I wonder if that's because he had two very supportive parents who are both very much artists. And so sometimes I find myself like thinking, I wonder what it would have been like to grow up with an artist in the family or whatever. But I never really stopped to consider what it would have been like if my mom was against it. So I would count my blessings, and at least she was supportive in every little way she could have been. So thanks for sharing that.
I'm happy to do that. And that's one of the reasons that I have this wonderful bank of information by your fellow artists, writers and graphic artists and literary artists and all these folks. And they're exposing themselves and their history and how they came to doing all of this kind of stuff. One of the universals seems to be that everyone started as a kid, you know, in their chosen media, writing or whatever. But some were encouraged, others discouraged. Some people, you know, found their calling later in life. I mean, it's an absolutely fascinating thing that I'm just so honored to be present to the telling of these stories. So let me ask you, when did the erotic element begin to show up in your work?
Around the same time.
My goodness, really?
No, it started really, really young. If I can relate with those other artists who grew up with opposition or parents who did not support their art, I can relate on that element that it was just instinctive. It was instinctive to draw, I think at the very early, other than doodles and stuff, like as you're growing up and as you're kind of developing your talent or skill, you copy stuff.
Right.
And so I copied a lot of what I watched in the Thundercats and the He-Man and stuff, and it was just natural to draw them naked or whatever. But it was, I mean, I was one of those perverts. You know, all of my toys, like my action figures and stuff that would have been worth something to today and stuff, I had glued dicks on them.
Goodness, no kidding. How amazing.
To everything that, you know, everything had to have dick. dick. And so it started from very young. And so I wish I could say why or how, but, you know, I was just I'm a very sexual person, and I was a sexual person very early.
Got it. So let me ask, is Jezza Smiles your real name? Are you Mr. and Mrs. Smiles' handsome son, Jezza? Or is this a pen name or a nom de plume?
It is very much a pen name.
It's a wonderful name. You're certainly distinctive.
Thank you. My real name is Jeremiah, and when I was in Australia, quite a few Aussies would say it, but I never really noticed, because I didn't know that they were talking to me when they would call me Jezza. But it's just an Aussie thing to shorten your name and put Z's in it. I didn't really notice it until a couple of people in my gymnastics group had called it, and you know, I was like, oh, Jezza, that's the first variation of my name that I've ever liked. Growing up, if anyone called me anything other than Jeremiah or Jay, it was an argument, if not worse. I'm not a Jeremy, I'm not a Jerry, I've just never felt like those, right. And so when people call me that, they might as well get my name wrong or call me someone else, like, it's like, hey, Richard, wait, your name is Richard, but I'm just,
I don't see myself as a Rich, you know, a lot of people call, hey, Rich, you know, and
yeah,
that's not me, I've never, you know, Dick is fine, and Rick, I've never been a Rick either, so, you know, I understand
See,
but you are a Jezza.
It's not you, so you don't like being called it.
Yeah.
So Jezza was the first one I liked, and then when I left Australia, it was just like, I want a pin name, because I do work outside of my erotic art, and so I didn't want to lose any clients or anything like that. So it's like Jezza, and it kind of makes me feel like I'm still at home and all.
Sweet. So I've had this running discussion with several other artists in this series, about the distinction between an artist and an illustrator. And I'd love for you to weigh in on this as well, if you will. Are you an artist? Are you an illustrator? Or are you both?
I am an artist and I am an illustrator. I think artist is a, for lack of a better word, a generic umbrella term.
Right, okay.
I think, you know, because, you know, I've met singers and musicians. Oh, I'm an artist. And they are very much an artist.
So true.
And so illustrator is just a more specific term of what type of artist you are. So,
but you know, the funny thing is that I've had people on this show who have said, you know, I'm an artist, I am not an illustrator.
Yeah,
my nose is in the air.
I've
got the credentials and I'm not this.
No, I don't think they're even an artist. I just think they're an ass. You know, I'm like, I've got a couple of names for you, and artist isn't it. But I've met those people, and yeah. You know, I don't understand why they have to get on their soapbox or that. They must. I think honestly that level of arrogance or need to put other types of art down comes from a big insecurity within their own art, like they don't believe in their own art or whatever, that they need to put other types of art down. And it's like, well, whatever.
So, you know, one of the things that caught my eye immediately about your work is that a lot of the people that you draw, that a lot of the characters that you draw are smiling. They're so joyful. This is obviously a reflection of your own personal demeanor, because I'm having such a wonderful time chatting with you, and you're laughing all the time. Well, this is grand. You clearly love your work, don't you?
I do. I smile a lot, and when I draw, it's not actually necessarily intentional.
Uh-huh.
Intentional. It's just that's just it. You know. I mean, I'm drawing guys with big dicks and having sex and stuff, and it's like, what's not to smile about? I think it's definitely a reflection of me. I'm a smiling person. You know, as a police officer, a lot of people can't believe, like, when they find out that I'm a cop or whatever, and they're like, oh, wow, you just don't seem like a cop. Oh, you smile all the time. And it's like, you know, smiling actually helps in the job, because most people respond better to smile.
Right, right.
And, you know, one of my best friends says, with a good smile, you can rule the world. And it's like, that's why those politicians are always smiling. But I like to smile, and I want my work to smile, and I want people to smile when they're looking at my work.
So, do you work with models, or are all of these exceptional creatures figments of your imagination? And if they are, I think that you need to see a doctor, like Dr. Dick, because this is what they call having sex on the brain.
Well, I definitely need to see a doctor. So I've got a lot of sex on the brain.
Yes, you do, Ollie.
But I've worked with a couple of models. When I lived in New York, it was nice because there's an erotic life drawing group there, so you can actually draw models having sex or playing with their dicks and stuff. That's one of the biggest things I miss about New York. That was a lot of fun. I've occasionally had a buddy or a playmate or whatever you want to call them. Oh, playmate. Yeah, that's like a Playboy type thing. I'll call him playmate. Model, but for the most part, I work from, like, I'm constantly doodling and trying to play with poses and stuff, because there's so many poses out there that are very much the same, that I'm constantly just doodling or just sketching different poses just to see how I can push it to be something different, and then I'll reference a library of pictures that I have to kind of get the anatomy right, since I exaggerate so much of it.
And we love that part, don't you know?
I do. I love to.
It's so nasty, and in the best sort of way. But listen, I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that we are over time for today, and I'm just getting started with you. I have so many more questions, and is it possible for you to come back next week and chat with us more?
Absolutely.
Yay!
Because I have to see you, doctor. I've got sex in the brain.
So listen, before we go, would you give us your website address and walk us around a little bit? And can we buy your artwork there?
No, you can't. Well, okay, my web address is, I'm usually just using my blog right now, so it's jezzasmiles.blogspot.com. And I have not made it available to sell directly on there yet, but hopefully by later in the year, I'll definitely have something like that. I've been working really hard on that.
Yes, good, because it would be wonderful to own an original, a Jezza Smiles original.
Well, I do commissions.
That's good to know. Good to know. So, and we can contact you through your site.
Yes, I have an email link on there.
Cool beans. Alrighty, darling. So until we chat again next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
All right, Dr. Dick.
Bye. Fantastic show, huh? Well, tune in next week at this time for part two of my chat with Jezza Smiles and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video Library. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. Remember that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? Until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.